I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
I'm going to give the audience what I think they want.
They want chase scenes and car crashes.
They want the cops to bend the rules to get the job done. They want the boy to get the girl. They want the good guy to win. They want the bad guy to die, hopefully in the biggest explosion the budget will allow. But most importantly, Senator, they want to walk into a theater and for 90 minutes forget the fucking mess that you have left of this nation.
Go get your bubblegum.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello, and welcome to the All Out of Bubblegum podcast. Today I got with me Marty and Brandon. Hello.
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 Hi.
And I am Stein. I forgot to introduce myself up top. Yeah, still no Brandon. We have no idea where he is. He's gone AWOL. Run away to South America. He's in the Antarctic.
You know, oh.
last I heard.
He'll show up with a fistful of pesos soon.
Yeah. So we're here to again talk about our love and patron saint, Steven Seagal. To say, does he have a middle name? Butch that. Steven Frederick Seagal, our hero and patron saint. So let's rock up that secondary intro.
I'm going to take you to the bank, Senator Trent. To the blood bank.
I will snatch every motherfucking birthday. What do you mean we want one?
I'm going to fuck you up ugly.
Uh-huh. Yeah, now you're a good pussy.
It's like I'm only trying to fuck a football now, really.
I was not born on a fucking turnip truck, man.
Do you feel me? You can't stand to be near me. Yeah, well, I come from a different place. My philosophy's from outer space.
Can I laugh in your face?
All right, so today we're here to talk about the most Steven Seagal of all the Steven Seagal movies, perhaps.
Yes.
Steven Seagal's only directorial effort, the seminal On Deadly Ground, and you know, one of the later ones. Another Keone Waxman DTV one, Cartels or Killing Salazar, depending on where you watch it and where you live, I think we've discovered. My copy is called Killing Salazar, and Brandon's copy is called Cartels, and we don't know why.
Both are sort of terrible titles.
Yep.
They do give the wrong impression.
They are. There's only the one Cartel, really, and well, who the fuck is Salazar? I guess. Those are the kind of titles where it has to make sense. Oh, we'll get back into it later, but it's very much like a Smoking Aces ripoff.
Yes.
And the thing is that with Smoking Aces, you don't need to know who Aces is. That title still works. Killing Salazar, I kind of want to know who Salazar is, because that's not another word. It doesn't sound cool without or anything.
It's like above the law being called Nico in some regions. It's like, who's Nico? Why should I care? Yeah.
I don't know if it's called that over here, but I think it's called that in the UK. Oh. So I think my DVD is called Nico, because my Blu-ray has Nico. But I don't know what it was called when it came out here. We probably translated it anyway. All the loathing. I don't know.
Great.
But yeah, On Deadly Ground. The Steven Seagal, he wrote this, I directed it, he produced it. It is the most Seagal of all the Seagals. And well, this came about as sort of a trade deal. We talked about Under Siege last time. And Under Siege was Seagal's biggest box office hit by a wide margin. And Warner Brothers said, hey, do Under Siege 2 for us. And Steven Seagal said, no, I don't want to. And they said, come on, we'll give you anything. And he said, okay, let me direct my own movie. And so that was the trade. And they first had to let him direct his own movie before he did Under Siege 2. And so he did. And we got On Deadly Ground, which is
thank heavens.
Steven Seagal's pro-environment movie. It's It's very difficult to marry this movie with sort of like who Steven Seagal is now.
He's so far right, he moved to Russia.
Yeah, and he's like, he loves Joe Apiro and writes this. Well, I don't really believe Steven Seagal wrote his own book. I'm sure we'll eventually do an episode of Steven Seagal's book, but his Deep State book. And it's like, oh yeah, Joe Apiro wrote a foreword for it. And, yeah. And this is, it's like very much, we got to save the Earth is dying. Oh, the big conglomerates are buying the media and lying to us about how bad everything is. And now it'd probably be like, global warming's a hoax movie. On Deadly Ground 2, global warning's a hoax.
It does kind of prove horseshoe theory, you know, that the far left and the far right are kind of connected, almost connected. You kind of like easily go from like radical left to radical right without passing the center or something like that.
Oh, yeah, I'll believe it.
Yeah, I'd say that's very much what Steven Seagal did. And I feel this is the first one where we're entering Steven Seagal's like Native American period. Mm-hmm. We moved out of his Italian American, or what he actually fucking is, period. And moved into the delusional periods. I think Out for Justice is the last time he acknowledges that he's Italian. Mm-hmm. And Under Siege, I don't know what he's doing. It feels like he's going for some kind of weird Southern New Orleans kind of accent for a bit.
Yeah, Cajun.
And he'll certainly return to that later. But yeah, this one he thinks he's Native American. I think he's got his... Forrest Taft, and in like the second scene,
he's beating up a bunch of.
He gets adopted by a tribe, I guess.
Yeah,
of Native Americans. Of course, the movie's most prominent Native American character is played by an actress from Hong Kong.
Well, you can't get them all right.
Joan Chen.
Yeah, I haven't looked into Joan Chen's family tree, but she's born in China. Yeah. Yeah, so that makes me doubt she has Native American blood. I don't want to be rude to you, but I find it hard believing Native Americans went to China in the 60s. Yeah, Joan Chen, she was in what? It's Last Emperor?
She did three movies with Rutger Hauer as well. That's mainly where I know her from.
Oh yeah, I've seen Wedlock. Wonder in the future.
And she did
the cool one, the post-apocalyptic one with the sport. That one's great.
Salute of the Jugger.
That's a great movie.
She also did Sci-Fi Treasure of the Sierra Madre with Brian James and Rutger Hauer. Precious Find.
Oh. That one I've not seen.
Isn't that great?
Well, it's good that I picked that one to skip. I know her best from Twin Peaks. Obviously, she was in Twin Peaks, the first season, some of the second one. It was like, I think her character was originally supposed to be one of the main characters, and it was supposed to be Isabella Rossellini, because David Lynch was sleeping with her at the time. And it ended up being rewritten to the murder mystery, and she just has a smaller part in it. Oh, yeah, she's also in... Christopher Lambert ninja movie that rules.
The Hunted?
Yeah, but I think she dies really early in it, if I remember correctly. She gets killed, like, in the second scene, and that's his motivation for the rest of the movie. And she did an episode of MacGyver. I don't remember which, I just remember she was in MacGyver. I couldn't even tell you the season, and I'm not going to look it up. But yeah, we have this movie. And it starts off straight up, like, just both the first two scenes are all just like, look at how great Steven Seagal is. This wonder of a man.
Yes.
He comes flying in on his helicopter and just blows up an oil rig.
To save it.
That's what that's his special field, I guess. He stops oil fires by making huge explosions. The fight fire with fire kind of tactic.
Oh, I don't know. It's a metaphor.
Maybe it's something that actually works. I mean, like you make an explosion so big you suck out all the oxygen near the fire and choke it out. Mm. I'm guessing that's the logic behind it. I don't know. Maybe they do this for real. As always, if you work with killing oil fires by detonating huge explosions, send us an email on allouteofbubblegum@gmail.com and let us know about that.
I love all the ADR when Seagal steps out of the helicopter.
So much ADR. And there's like, oh, it's Forrest Taft. Oh, he's here. Oh, he's going to save us.
That fire is as good as out, somebody says at one point.
Yeah.
There's plenty of other good ADR throughout the film.
Yeah, right up in the next scene, too. And yeah, he's got his own ball cap with his own like company logo on it. It says Forrest Taft on it. I need one of those replica Forrest Taft fire extinguisher ball caps.
And in that scene, we also get introduced to Michael Caine, the villain, who was promised an Oscar for this by Steven Seagal, but I don't think he was nominated. So there's that.
Maybe he scored a Razzie. No, he escaped.
Oh.
The movie scored six Razzie nominations, but Michael Caine escaped. And they're not far into nominating Michael Caine. He's got a few of them. Jaws, 4, The Island, I think.
The Swarm. I don't know if he got nominated for The Swarm. I'm just saying.
The Swarm is too early, I think. Oh, okay. That's 70s.
Okay.
They started out in 1980 exactly, I think.
Oh, okay.
Michael Caine, a great actor, loves to do awful movies.
Yes. And he's the evil billionaire character in this who owns the oil company. But it seems so quaint and understated by today's standards. Because like today's billionaires, like Elon Musk and Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, they're trying to take over the world. Their evilness is on a whole nother level compared to like Michael Caine's evilness, who just wants to build an oil rig. It's almost quaint by today's standards.
Yeah, he wants to build an oil rig so he can keep selling oil. How evil. Yeah.
That monster.
Because he has 2 weeks to finish his new oil rig to get it operational, or the rights of the oil will go back to the tribal council. Mm-hmm. That's the motivation for Michael Caine's evil in this. Michael Caine sporting a ridiculous hair dye job in this.
Trying to make his hair look black as oil.
Oh.
Yeah, predicting Steven Seagal's future hair.
He doesn't have the widow's peak yet.
No. But yeah, Michael Caine, jet black here in this one.
And a fantastic accent.
Yeah, is he doing an American accent?
No one knows.
I can't tell, because Michael Caine, it's got to be one of the worst actors to add accents.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, I don't think I've ever seen him trying to do an American accent in a movie where I've been like, oh, he's doing an American accent. I didn't. Like, every time I just think he's doing a British accent, his normal accent, and then I read up and I'm like, oh, he's supposed to be American? Well, someone should have told him.
Yeah. Is that a bit of British I hear?
It's like, he's just like Jason Statham, and I was like, oh, you're hiding your accent, yeah. Hiding it right on the top there. I'm guessing.
Oh, those Cockney master Texans. Of accent.
Not a master of accents like Steven Seagal.
That is
true. But yeah, straight on to the second scene, which is also just how badass is Steven Seagal. He goes to a bar, and what is it? Mike Starr, beloved character actor Mike Starr, who we all know and love from. Fuck. He's Ed Wood.
Oh, Ed Wood, okay.
I don't know if I remember him from anything. Is he in Goodfellas? I always want to say he's in Goodfellas. But he doesn't seem Italian enough for Goodfellas.
I really don't know. I'm going to have to check that.
Mike Starr may be in Goodfellas.
Okay. He's the main character.
But yeah, Yeah, that was him. Yeah, he's being racist to some of the natives. And I'm guessing Steven Seagal is supposed to be a little bit native in this. Is that why he's called Forrest? Maybe.
He's called Forrest because he protects the forest.
Yeah, but he starts beating up some other oil workers who aren't Mike Starr.
Yeah, they're all geriatric old men that like look like they could. Yeah. Like, it's like, yeah, he's Steven Seagal. You beat up that 80-year-old oil worker. Congrats.
Yeah, but then at some point he's like, oh, that's oil rig workers, zero, natives, seven, yeah, or something. And it's like, okay, so you are you supposed to be Native American in this too? I guess.
Half Native American? I don't know.
I mean, he has the jacket.
He does. This is another incredible Steven Seagal fashion movie. The best jackets. I think there's only really one. It's this, and then next it's Fire Down Below. That's the final of like the great Steven Seagal fashion movies, I think.
Oh, what about Half Past Dead?
It's all
the do rag.
But he just wears a jumpsuit the whole movie, doesn't he?
Okay, fair enough. That's what he deserves to wear. But
yeah. There's no more flashy jackets soon. Okay. It's all just dress dark to hide that you are 250 pounds.
Gotta be more than that at this point.
He beats up about a dozen oil rig workers to get to Mike Starr and beats him in like a game of slappy hands or whatever. <call that shit. laughs> Like a chicken, kind of chicken game about slapping the hands. And it's like, what does it take to change the essence of a man? Which, of course, one of the most legendary Seagal lines.
It's a total non sequitur. I love it.
But he fundamentally changes this guy down to the soul level by beating him up.
Yeah. It's also funny that Kelly LeBrock, who he was still married to at the time, did a commercial for a cologne, and the commercial was called The Essence of Man.
No!
Oh.
That can't be true.
What is The Essence of Man? I mean, that cannot be a coincidence.
Oh, The Essence of Man.
And Steven Seagal's got this friend who's like 120 years old. oil rig foreman.
He's also a computer hacker.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not buying that this man can use a computer.
I mean, when he's using like that keyboard, he looks like a Muppet or something like that, with like the wires attached to his hands as he's like touching the keyboard. Like, he has no clue what he's doing in real life.
Steven Seagal, however, he's hacker man.
Oh, yeah. That is true. He taught him everything he knows.
Yeah. And he is played by Richard Hamilton, 74 years at the time of recording, looks 150. He was in Pale Rider with Eastwood.
Oh, I think. Okay.
Yeah, he was also in. He played in Man in Black. He's like the guy. He was like Tommy Lee Jones' first partner. I think maybe you see him in a picture or something. Like a really old actor, but who didn't really start acting until he was also rather old.
Hey, Grandpa, you should do this acting thing.
I don't. But yeah, they're blaming him for it. Or Michael Caine wants to pin all the blame on this old guy.
Yeah.
While this old guy's like, oh, it was faulty equipment. They're using shitty equipment for some reason. But Michael Caine's like, why would I use shitty equipment? Oh, it would cost me money if my oil rigs didn't pump enough oil. And Steven Seagal's like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, which gives me... I have a question. So, the point is, the good equipment takes too long to be delivered. So it wouldn't be... So the oil rig wouldn't be functional in time for the 2 weeks to pass, right?
Uh-huh.
So is the oil rig we see blowing up, or that Steven Seagal blows up at the beginning, is that the oil rig they originally had to keep the rights?
I think that's just like one of the other oil rigs he has.
Yeah, because it would have taken longer to build the Aegis rig, right? Like, it's a pretty big thing. Yeah, so,
it's huge.
Yeah.
So this is just another oil rig that has faulty equipment, even though it doesn't need to be functional within 2 weeks?
Yeah, no, it just needs... I think maybe it was... Like, they put the faulty equipment in the other ones to save the functional equipment for the new one. I don't really understand the whole... It doesn't make that much sense.
No.
It's a Steven Seagal movie.
Because also, if he's just going to fire up the new one with faulty equipment, what, it's... What, Steven Seagal's just going to have to blow that one up too within a week? yeah, but then you ask about Steven Seagal and the Crypt Keeper. look up the... Like, list equipments online, and they're like, oh yeah, this is all, this doesn't make any sense. This is all shitty and faulty. And so Grandpa downloads it onto a floppy disk.
yeah.
And just then John C. McGinley and Sven Ole Torsen rock up and just torture the shit out of him.
Which is an effective scene, I'd say. I mean, it makes you hate the bad guys. I mean, sure, it's like pretty simple. You know, they torture him, but I mean, it works well enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that
he cut his leg with a pipe cutter.
Something like that.
Yeah, something pretty like gnarly, that.
Yeah.
Fuck up his knee. Whatever. Yeah, there's some violence. I like that he keeps his VHS collection in his shotgun cabinet.
Yeah, I noticed that. That's not what I would do.
I wonder if it's all Steven Seagal movies in.
I've got a copy of Hard to Kill and 3 copies of Marked for Death.
Well, he wouldn't have Marked for Death because it's not a Warner title, so they'd have to pay for that VHS to be there. You gotta think about that. Yeah, torture him to death, and then they get... Oh yeah, and at one point in there, Michael Caine is shooting a commercial about a commercial or like just a video. He's like, "Oh yeah, it's so terrible about all the oil spills," and there's a reindeer,
sort of a PR video, I guess.
Yeah, something like that. And then immediately as they say cut, he's just like, "Oh, get this fucking." The animal off of me, it smells like shit and burned my coat because the animal touched it.
Which is respectable satire, I guess. I mean, they could have done worse.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, and then we get a cameo from Irving Kirshner, who directed Empire Strikes Back. He's the director of the commercial.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It's just in there for a second. It's like, oh yeah, imagine this close up on, and it's Michael Caine's like, just keep that shit to yourself.
So I don't care you directed Star Wars. This is a cheapie.
I like to imagine he's playing himself.
But on Empire, you let me have free reign.
I mean, it's believable. After RoboCop 2, he's down doing commercials.
For evil oil barons. I can believe it.
Yeah. Very unremarkable career, given that he directed Empire Strikes Back. Same with the guy who did Return of the Jedi. It's like, there's only the Claris, just for hire guys. Like, oh, yeah. Did they ever do anything else? Not really.
Well, did Irvin Kershner, he directed a Bond film, didn't he? Never Say, was it? Never
Say Never Again. The shitty unofficial one. Yeah, he did that one.
Yeah.
Sure, but it's like nobody cares. And the other guy, I don't even remember his name.
Richard Marquand?
Yeah, that guy. tell me a movie he did.
Return of the Jedi, and that's it.
Yeah, well, another one.
And I know another one, but I can't think of it right now.
I think he did one with Donald Sutherland. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're Richard Marquand, send us an email. Tell us what you made.
If you're still alive.
Yeah, maybe not. I don't know. George Lucas is still alive, so there's always a chance. Yeah. And well, then they come to Steven Seagal and they're like, "Oh, there's another situation, and only you can do it. We know you hate us now, but just do us one last favor, Forrest. One last one." And they fly him out into this, I don't know, like an oil rig out in the middle of the Alaskan wilderness. It looks completely abandoned, and Steven Seagal's wearing like a space suit to go in there.
It's like it's like leaking mustard gas or something like that, and he has to set off a nuke inside to save everybody.
Yeah, before he was standing next to a geyser of flaming oil, and he was just wearing overalls.
Yeah,
and then, well, dude, what does he find in there? A lot of dynamite and his old grandpa buddy murdered to death.
Murdered to death.
And so, yeah, then they blow it up. John C. McGinley blows it up, and Steven Seagal is running for the door and just opens it, and he's blown across the wilderness instead.
Yeah, it's a respectable
really
style.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, Richard Marquand died in the 80s.
Oh.
That's bad taste. He's been super dead for so long.
Yikes.
Now I feel sad. Yeah. Joke about that.
We can cut it in editing. It'll be super awkward.
He died before email was invented.
Oh.
Jesus, Irving Kershner also died so long ago. I thought these guys lived until died like last year or something. He did never work after RoboCop 2, so maybe he did make PR movies for shady old companies.
But I don't really get, because then John C. McGinley and Michael Caine fly back to Aegis Oil's headquarters or whatever. And then when they're there, Michael Caine says, "You know what? You should check if Steven Seagal is really dead."
Yeah, could have landed when they were there watching it blow up.
But, yeah, they were there. Nobody else was completely abandoned. They could have just gone and checked, but no.
It's too cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, well, obviously, spoilers. Steven Seagal lives. He's found by a tribe of natives, and they take him in and nurse him back to health.
Yeah.
Yupik tribe, according to information, a real tribe.
Okay.
So they heal him and send him on a vision quest to give him strength.
He fights a bear.
He dances with a bear.
This for me is probably the weakest part of the movie. There's some good stuff here, like him fighting the bear, but the second act, it kind of prevents the movie from being like a Mark for Death level masterpiece in my book. It does kind of drag a little bit at times with him like riding dog sleds around and like moping around these huts and stuff like that. It doesn't last for that long. But the film, in my opinion, probably could have been tightened up just a tiny bit here to make things better. That's just my take.
Yeah, maybe. I thought it started to drag a little, but then Steven Seagal, one, fights a bear.
Yeah.
And two, he has to choose between an old toothless lady and a naked chick. And he picks the old toothless lady.
Yeah.
It's a test.
What?
He chose wisdom or something. I don't know.
No, you know what they say? The women without teeth play the skin flute best. I think it's an old saying.
That's what he was thinking, I'm sure.
Yeah.
He does try to steal hijack a dog sled, and he gets castrated by a husky biting his nads off. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, it's also the fake torso scene. when he's shirtless, and it's very, it's not his torso at all. Like, they just got him poking out of the floor, and then there's a fake body that looks better than his real one. Because this is the, yeah, this one, and then next, the Under Siege 2, is the ones where he really started having weight issues. So there's like a rubber torso in this one. But yeah, he dances with the bear, and that gives him the strength that he needs to return. And yeah, it turns out they had a snow scooter all along, that snowmobile that he can just drive back down to a society or whatever it went.
Yeah. Probably runs on oil.
It's not iron. One of those electric snowmobiles.
Yeah, and then he has a conversation with Joan Chen, where he says something like, "Yeah, all that spiritual shit, the mythology shit, that's all bullshit. You don't need it in the real world."
I thought that was actually kind of a good scene where he kind of like goes on a rant saying, "Oh, there is no justice but the justice we make ourselves." I mean, he probably didn't put it quite so eloquently because he's Steven Seagal, but he just kind of talks about how hard the world is, and there's no magic fairies that are gonna come down and like make things right. You have to do things right yourself and be the change you want to see in the world. And I thought that was an effective enough scene, even though, I mean, it's delivered by Steven Seagal, who can't really act that well.
It also just undoes everything in the 30 minutes prior.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And then also at one point, John C. McGinley shows up and shoots Joan Chen's dad. Kind of skipped over that. Yeah. It's a bit important. Kind of informs her actions a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, because then she also says something like, "I'm going to watch you die." Which, spoiler alert, she doesn't. She just confuses him with Michael Caine at the end.
Same old white guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they go down again out of the snow and into... It's a remarkable how much snow there is where they're going from, and then like there's... It's just summer down where they get to.
Global warming.
Steven Seagal takes her to his cave of death, where he's just stored enough weapons to invade a small nation. And at this time also Michael Caine's realized that Steven Seagal is probably alive and he's hired in a full mercenary team led by Arlie Ermey.
This guy understood the assignment here. He pumps up Steven Seagal so much verbally that you like know that like Arlie Ermey knew that Steven Seagal was an egomaniac who needed to have his ego massaged at all times. This guy knew what he was doing.
Yeah, in the back half here we get like three separate monologues, two from Michael Caine and one from Arlie Ermey, who's about how bad Steven Seagal is. Like, oh, look into your deepest, darkest part of your soul and imagine what a nightmare is. And, well, it doesn't even get close to how badass this guy is. Yeah, well, then Steven Seagal just starts killing everyone, I guess.
I mean, that's the last act. It's just like 30 or 40 minutes of death and destruction, and it's good.
Yeah, he blows up a shack and a helicopter and put in some landmines, and it explodes. This guy, just pieces of flesh flying everywhere. It's like super violent. Definitely feels like this was probably cut down.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this would probably have been like a 2.5 hour double X rated film with Steven Seagal having like a 45 minute monologue at the end if it was up to him.
There are a few moments where it does feel like the violence was trimmed a little bit, and whatever, it's not that big of a deal, but you can kind of see that there are a few moments that feel like blood squibs were cut, or like when the old lady drives her truck into the canister of oil, you do kind of get a feeling that there's some things that were cut, but it's not too big of a deal really.
No, it's still violent.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, so he just kills his way through the forest down to the oil refinery, and then just starts killing everyone at the oil refinery, I guess.
Makes a silencer out of a pop bottle.
Yeah, we got some great kills in here. In my opinion, the greatest Steven Seagal kill of all time, when he stabs the guy in the face and turns him around and pushes him into the wall so the knife comes back out of the back of his head. That's like, doesn't get better than that.
He just shreds off John C. McGinley's face with a helicopter propeller. You see the glasses go flying on the ground.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's a great detail when his glasses just hit the floor with all of his face blood. Yeah, they kind of stole that in Expendables 2, I guess. It's kind of the same way Scott Adkins goes out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, he just kills everyone. Blows up Billy Bob Thornton. he shoots Lee Ermey with a shotgun, I think.
Yeah.
Many deaths in this. Start mixing them up. The only person in the whole movie he doesn't kill is Michael Caine's personal assistant, who's a lady.
Yeah.
So he can't kill a woman.
Well.
So he gets out. She drives her car into a tank of gas and blows up on her own accord.
Yeah.
So that wasn't Steven Seagal didn't kill her. So.
Which once again proves my theory: women can't drive.
Yeah, Steven Seagal's like, yeah, okay, I'll kill 150 soldiers, but not women. No women. Although, as we learn in the later movie, he will make exception for ugly women.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she blows up, and then he lassoes Michael Caine, and hangs him upside down, and drops him into a giant wad of oil, I guess. And it just blows everything the fuck up.
So poetic.
Yeah, and Joan Chen says something like, kill him for me. Like, no, it was supposed to be John McGinley that you wanted to see die.
That's true.
Well, they're all dead now. That's the whole... The last 40 minutes of this is just, maybe even more so, I didn't check the time, but like it's just a straight up massacre.
Not a fair fight.
Non-stop glorious. Killing... and then we get the Steven Seagal speech, the end, when he goes to the Alaskan City Council or whatever it is, and
state legislature.
You can only fine a company $25,000 a day, but when they make $10 million, who cares? They're ruining the environment by dumping toxic waste and blah blah blah. And this is the scene that allegedly ran like twice as long before it was cut down.
Yeah, everybody complains about this scene going on for like 5 hours, but every time I rewatch the film, it doesn't seem that long, and it's not that bad of a speech, really.
No.
It's fine. It does go on longer than you expect a speech to go on in a Steven Seagal film, but I thought it was fine. It gets the point across well enough and doesn't go on that long. But it is laughable at times because you would see what Steven Seagal would become in like the 2010s and 2020s, but it's fine.
I admire his balls, really, for ending his murder-tastic action movie with a big leftist speech.
Yeah, it's bold.
Yeah.
This is... I said earlier that killing cells is sort of like smoking aces. Exploitation or ripoff, whatever. And this is like Billy Jack exploitation, I guess. But we don't know, like Billy Jack was like the hippie action movies in the 70s, and I think they went into the 80s. Maybe the first was even from the 60s. But it's also like a guy who imagined himself a bit of a Native American, and he was the writer, director, producer, star of all of them. Mm-hmm. This guy called Tom Laughlin. And there's four of them. And I think it's the third one. And it's like what this one would have been if they let him go all out. It's like 3 hours long. It's called The Trial of Billy Jack.
Oh, exciting.
And that's what this one would have been if they just had not made any cuts to it and just let Steven Seagal do everything he wanted, probably. Yeah, and then one has the third one there is called Billy Jack Goes to Washington, where it's That was what On Deadly Ground 2 should have been. Steven Seagal goes to Washington and becomes a senator.
Senator Taft, yeah.
Yeah, that's what this feels like, kind of like the, except those were sort of like independent movies, and this is obviously has major studio backing. I guess then we get the end credits, and that's my only problem with this movie, is that there's a song over the end credits, but it's not by Steven Seagal.
It's by the Scorpions. It's good.
Scorpions.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's it. This is the ultimate Steven Seagal vanity project, and then it's not a Steven Seagal song over the credits.
No, nah, like, fair enough.
This is the one that should have had a Steven Seagal song.
Steven Seagal and the Scorpions, they should have collaborated on a song.
Yeah, like Steven Seagal, Winds of Change cover.
The Winds of Change. Lock me down
but
to
rewrite the
Gorky Park.
Yeah, well, make it less about the Cold War and make it about environment or something.
Yeah.
Punch up those lyrics, whatever. Sure, Steven Seagal had some great rewriting tips for the Scorpions.
And speaking of music, the musical score in this film is done by Basil Poldoris, who's like one of the top 10 film score composers of all time. He did Conan the Barbarian and Big Wednesday and RoboCop and Farewell to the King and all this good stuff. And now here he is slumming on Deadly Ground, basically like reusing the music he used in Farewell to the King. But for the most part, it's kind of a majestic musical score. And it's not terrible. I mean, it's kind of weird. It
fits.
Yeah.
It doesn't really leave that much of an impression.
Yeah.
Like when you watch RoboCop, you'll be humming the music. Mm-hmm. But this is just really good, fine music that's also out of your mind as soon as the movie ends.
Yeah, it doesn't have the strongest melodies or anything like that. But, I mean, it works, and it complements the eagle screech as well. You know, you'll hear this majestic music, and then on, like, 12 different times in this film, you hear an eagle go, like, on the soundtrack. So, they work well together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, well, unlike Under Siege, this movie bombed at the box office. It made less than $40 million against its $50 million budget. It made almost 80 worldwide, but that's so it basically probably made it made back its budget worldwide, but it failed in the U.S. and scored six Razzie nominations, where Steven Seagal successfully won for worst director.
Which is kind of weird, because I think he directed this film pretty well. I mean, for a first-time director. I mean, there's some exciting action here.
Yeah, there's nothing really wrong with this. I think it's just that it bombed, and it's a vanity project, and then they target it.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
There. You can look up what he beat. I mean, this is one where, like, yeah, the big winners this year was, like, Wyatt Earp, which, again, is like, I'm sorry, but Wyatt Earp is just, it's another one. It's a bit of a vanity project, and it's a bit long, but it's mostly just a good movie.
Yeah, it's
there's nothing wrong with Wyatt Earp. It's just, okay, you gotta accept that it's a vanity, like, get over the vanity project part of it. What we have here, like, Beverly Hills Cop 3 nominated. I feel we could allow John Landis to win a worst director, even though Beverly Hills Cop 3 is just like the third worst thing he's put out after his murder and his son. Yeah, the worst picture winner was Color of Night, that Bruce Willis, like, steamy sex psychological thriller. Erotic psychological thriller. The one where Bruce Willis shows hog.
Now I just want to see Steven Seagal show hog. That's all I want now. If his belly doesn't cover
under the ground, only Under the Ground 2, Steven Seagal posts hole. Well, he wasn't even go shirtless in this one, so doubt his hanging hogs. But yeah, I mean, critically derived, bombed at the box office. They didn't know what they had. And truly, like, just this, the beginning of the end for Seagal, which is kind of ironic given that it follows this he's basically, his peak and his valley are like right after each other here. It made Gene Siskel's worst of the year list. So people were just here. Even Leonard Clady even compared it to Billy Jack, but said like Tom Laughlin was a better actor and director than Steven Seagal. Mm-hmm. It's really, people, they shat on this movie, and we never got it this good again.
I don't even think that this is the worst movie from 94 featuring a character called Forrest.
What's the worst?
It's Forrest Gump.
Oh, okay, I got.
Yeah, it's also kind of weird that fucking the character that boomer Tom Hanks plays is the one that's named after the racist.
Oh, I guess that brings us on to our second, the end of the death rattles half of his career movie, which we have Cartels, aka Killing Salazar, originally titled Killing Salazar, it says, I guess then changed that to Cartels when they put it out on DVD for reasons. I don't know, or maybe just was it like China Salesman has like four different titles on home video, I think. So it's like, maybe it's just like, oh yeah, the worse the movie, the more titles they try to give it to have people accidentally buy it.
Oh, that would make Duck You Sucker the worst film of all time, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and this is 2017. It's the one that we talked about a bit last time too, because it's, no one can sort of agree which came out last, this or what's it called again? We watched it last time. End of Gun? No. Code Contract to Kill. Yeah, that's it. Jesus.
Yeah, like a monkey fucking a football.
Yeah, if you go to Wikipedia, it's like Cartels is the last one, and then there's even a movie between Cartels and Contract to Kill. And if you go to IMDb, it's a different list. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. We went on with the IMDb listings on these. So, that's where we are. It's another Keone Waxman one. And how do you say? They did like 11 movies together, I guess.
And a TV show. Didn't they do a few episodes of True Justice together or something?
I think he did almost all of one season or something. Oh. He did several episodes. Yeah. He was just the Steven Seagal guy, I guess, from like 2009 through 2016-17. And they did like 11 movies in 7 years, I guess, or 8 years. No one can agree when this movie came out. It's a mystery. You attended the world premiere of Cartels, let us know. Limited theatrical release in 2017. I wonder where it played. Maybe it does play in like America. You get like, oh, it has a two. You can watch it for 2 days at the mall.
It opens somewhere like in some third world country, probably, just to make a few bucks.
Romania.
Romania, yes, is the native place where it's filmed. Romania.
Yeah, I think this one's filmed in Romania, because at least the actor who plays the titular Salazar, he's a Romanian actor. Okay. Romanian nepo baby, even.
Ooh.
He's the son of a more famous Romanian actor, apparently.
And he used all his pull to get him into this movie.
He plays like a half Colombian, half Russian character, which I believe is what Steven Seagal identifies now. He's half Colombian, half Russian.
Yeah, we get a lot of information from like a pre-title text scroll. Tells us everything we need to know. And then we open up on, I guess they're raiding his compound. Mm-hmm. And Steven Seagal's leading this operation. And He just keeps messing up the phrase, the word go. And when he's doing like his team talk at the start, and he keeps saying go word and then word go every other. And it's like, you didn't do two takes, did you? Yeah, you got this Romanian guy and Georges St-Pierre is playing chess. And we don't know anything about them except what the text just told us. And then they raid this compound, I guess. And was Luke Goss in this scene? Or is he only... He's not in the opening raid?
No, I don't think so.
You don't think... Okay. Well, I gotta trust you on that then. He just comes in later. well, they raid this place and... they shoot them up. There's some decent action, but...
Yeah.
Steven Seagal shoots somebody who is on fire.
He got put him off his misery, cool. Yeah. He's very compassionate, the Steven Seagal guy.
He's a good guy. Not a nice guy. Yeah, and then they shoot the Salazar guy. I guess, woohoo, you killed Salazar. Good job. It's the first minute, and you fulfill the title.
But, well, he was actually supposed to be taken alive, and then Steven Seagal just shoots him. So
yeah, and well, it turns out that was all part of the plan, I guess, because they're faking his death to question mark. That's where I fell off. Like, why are they? Is he gonna turn witness or whatever? I mean,
yeah, I think that's the plot. Like, he's gonna testify against his own cartels. Is that the plot?
I guess, but it's like he's the worst one of them, so that's what I don't get. It's sort of like there's no way, there's no part of this movie is there enough redemption to redeem this anyone? Character who's like the, it was supposed to be like, oh, he's gonna have a good guy turn, but it's like, sorry, but he's basically Pablo Escobar, and he's done nothing good.
But he cares about family.
Yeah.
No, that's terrible.
Then we're moving into the twist ending.
Oh, sorry.
But yeah. What I like about this opening scene, and also just throughout the whole movie, is that they do this thing that I associate with Godfrey Ho and this movie, especially from this movie that he did call, maybe it's just a Hong Kong thing more than anything, but they just have like these small tables everywhere that every time someone falls, they have like a tiny table to fall through. So it just makes it feel like, oh yeah, okay. It's a slightly more impact because there was a table there to fall through. I just think that's good. I remember from this movie called Manhattan Chase, where Cynthia Rodrick fights a guy in an alley. And for some reason, there's a tiny table in the alley that he can fall onto for some extra impact. And I was like, that's why I've ever associated with Godfrey Ho. Because I was like, who the fuck puts a tiny table in an alley? So every time someone falls through a tiny table, I think of Manhattan Chase. That's the only one where they couldn't even make it natural for a table to be there. Yeah, so they put him up at a safe... It turns out they faked his death. They put him up in this safe suite, I guess, in the World Trade Center Hotel.
I had to read that several times. World Trade Center Hotel. I had to read that like five times to make sure I knew understand what was going on there. It was so absurd.
That's like a bottom three name ever for a hotel. Why would you call it that? Like, what, 9/11 hotels wasn't available?
Oh, we forgot the best part when he's in Missouri and they say, "Welcome to Missouri." Like, it's like the hardest thing you could, like, hardest place you could ever visit was Missouri, and like it's filmed in Romania somewhere.
Well, yeah, because there's sort of a narrative device where Luke Goss is being interviewed by Steven Seagal.
Oh, no. Don't even.
Yeah, there's like a framing device of which is Luke Goss, who's a British boy band star turned DTV action hero.
Dime Store Jason Statham?
Yeah, kind of. But he was in a band with his brother, like when they were like young, very young, called Bros. Him and his identical twin brother Matt. And I'm sure we're gonna play one of their songs at the end. Yeah, there's a documentary about them you can watch. Yeah, it looks like they were like 18 when they started doing that. Well, basically, they were kind of big, but then their parents had made like a terrible deal with the record company where they was not making any money of it, so they just kind of quit while they were at the height of their fame because they weren't making any money for it, so they just broke up the band. They had 13 hit singles in the UK.
Holy shit.
Jesus. Yeah.
This is like with the Robbie Williams. Like, nobody's huge in the UK. Well, he was huge in all of Europe, but this is more like huge in the UK. Nobody knows them.
Unless they watch crap action movies.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I know him for crap action movies. And I was like, wait, he was in a band?
You and me both. I had no clue. He doesn't look like a boy band singer.
Well, he had hair back then.
Okay. That helps.
Yeah, he's very bald now. That's what makes the Steven... No, that's not Steven Seagal. Jason Statham. Yeah. No, they did like a comeback in 2017, and then there also was a documentary about him. That's how I learned about it.
Oh.
Before that, I was like, oh, yeah, he's the bad guy from Hellboy 2. Right?
That's it. Hellboy 2 and Blade 2.
Yeah. Every time Guillermo del Toro's doing a sequel, he's just like, hey, Luke, you free? Yeah, just some of the worst DTV movies, I guess. It just pumps them out, too. There's so many of them. And you've never heard of them, almost. He even took over the Death Race series from Jason Statham, so the comparisons just keep rolling in, really. But what he can do that Statham can't do, an American accent.
Yeah.
So I could not tell that he's English in this at all.
No, his American accent is very good, yeah. Luke Goss is better than Michael Caine.
Yeah. Give him that Oscar.
Yeah. Power ranking of British actors. It's Luke Goss number one, Jason Statham number two, Michael Caine three.
Laurence Olivier four.
Where's the Laurence Olivier Steven Seagal movie? You're robbed.
Oh, man. We'll have to wait for AI to do it for us.
Yeah, so, well, that's the framing device. It's Luke Goss is being interrogated by Steven Seagal, who... I fucking can't catch a word he's saying in this. This got to be the mumbliest Steven Seagal performance ever.
Yeah. And it's kind of there's like a secretary sitting behind Steven Seagal who has like a massive cleavage.
You know, he chose that costume out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is the one where you kind of have to understand what he's saying because it's like all he's doing is delivering dialogue. And it feels like he's basically playing two characters. Like, his characters should be two different people, but yeah, they merged them together. Like, yeah, he also leads the charge at the start of the movie, and then he also leads a charge in a flashback at the end of the movie. And it feels like these characters aren't the same. It's like there's one army commander and one interrogator, and they should be two different people, but they're just, both of them are Steven Seagal for some reason. And also, just it just doesn't work. Steven Seagal is so easily the worst part of this movie.
Yes,
because it's like there's later in the movie there's a scene that sort of introduces him where he walks into the room. It's like, oh, I'm the guy you should have called 30 minutes ago. And it's like, yeah, this is a great introduction for this character if you haven't introduced him twice already in the movie. He's like, oh, yeah, this is the come-to-Jesus moment. I wasn't born on the back of a turnip truck.
I was born on
a bright summer day. Whatever.
Something like that.
Just, like, just reeling off, like, mumbling mumbo-jumbo dialogue. No fucking idea what he's talking about. But he's trying to figure out what happened. And it, yeah, it's just a bad narrative device, because it's like, okay, we know that nothing's bad gonna happen with them, and sort of we already know almost like how things are gonna play out in this hotel, because we have this narrative device that's already informed us of that before we get to the flashbacks.
Yeah.
So Luke Goss is one of like two majors in charge of protecting Salazar at this hotel, and the other one being some guy called Darren E. Scott, who's a stunt guy, as far as I can tell. This is the biggest role he's ever been given. He should be given more. He's like, he's good in this.
Really? You think?
I think he's fairly good, and his fights are good. Like, his fight with George St. Pierre is like the best fight in the film. He's got skills.
Yeah, I thought the cast was pretty charismatic, except for Steven Seagal, obviously, who cannot... He's like a charisma black hole. But other than that, I thought the cast was fine. I thought they're pretty impressive, actually, in some regards.
I thought Luke Goss was definitely a standout.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you got George St. Pierre. He's just a terrible actor. A great UFC fighter, as I understand. But, yeah. There's a reason he's not yet had a lead, even though he's moved into movies. All his movie roles are basically cameos. It felt like he turns up in Winter Soldier, and I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be like a big break for him. And I don't know if he's just not into acting or whatever, because he turned back up again in Falcon and the Winter Soldier as the same guy, but it's just like, hey, he was in Kickboxer Vengeance and some DTV stuff, but it's very sporadic. I don't know, maybe he's just not into acting, or maybe he's too bad of an actor to to act. But yeah, supposedly one of the greatest UFC fighters of all time. Not that into UFC, so I don't know. But that's what people tell me. I understand he's only lost two fights ever, and then he beat them both in the rematches. So. There's no fighter he's ever like lost to without beating them in the rematch.
Mm. Except Steven Seagal.
We get a Steven Seagal versus George St. Pierre fight later on, and that's the worst fight in the movie. For sure.
Yeah, it's Steven Seagal. There's a great scene where they fall off the balcony inside the hotel. I was like, is that supposed to be Steven Seagal? Because he weighs, like, that guy who fell off the balcony weighs, like, 110. And, like, they get back up again. It's like, oh, it was Steven Seagal who just fell off that balcony. Okay, that yeah, they should have hired a different stuntman.
So cut to pieces.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we're in this hotel, I guess, where they're storing him. And then, obviously, just people are coming there to kill him. Because, as far as I understand the plot, basically, this... corrupt DEA agent Mike Darrell has cut a deal with George St. Pierre, basically to set up that he can assassinate Salazar, and then he will take over Salazar's trade, I guess, or whatever, and then he will cooperate more with this corrupt DEA agent than Salazar was willing to. And that's what's happening?
I guess.
I mean, it's less convoluted than some of Steven Seagal's direct-to-video films, but it's still not the most sensical thing I've ever seen in my life.
Because isn't there, like, a third party at the hotel at some point? Because the football team is with Georges St. Pierre, I think.
Yes.
Then there's the other guys who are coming through the roof.
Yeah, I never understood if that was part of the same team or not. Because they seem slightly more tactical. But guessing it's just the same people? Because they're definitely bad guys and not like from the DEA or anything. Because Darren Scott kills a bunch of them. But yeah, then the sort of the big turning point is that Salazar is watching television and there's a report that his wife's been killed in a car bomb. And it turns out that's the George St. Pierre did that. And that's when he flips, I guess. And then... Yeah. I don't know. He hated... And then it's like, oh, it turns out he built the hotel and he was had been hiding a shotgun in this suite for like 10 years. Whatever.
Yeah. There's tunnels and there's some hotel.
Yeah, and then at some point he chokes out Darren Scott and steals his gun, but then when they're just friends, like one right afterwards, I just didn't understand any of it. But maybe that's because the guys that come down from the roof, he changes his mind again. Yeah, it's definitely like Smoking Aces, exploitation-ish, but but there's only one faction coming to kill him? Question mark.
Yeah,
it felt like Die Hard.
And also, they're not really coming to kill him. They're just waiting in the lobby.
Well, some go up the elevator, don't they? Well,
yeah, okay. A few.
Yeah.
And also, I love that of the whole team that's there. It's like, yeah, Luke Goss and Darren Scott are wearing like Kevlar and tactical gear, and then all the women U.S. Marshals are wearing like leather jackets and T-shirts.
Once again, Steven Seagal in charge of the outfits.
Yeah, someone's like, yeah. I'm sorry, but you need to look sexy. So it's like, oh yeah, they get shot. Of course they get shot. They're not. They're only wearing T-shirts.
Yeah, I was even confused if, like, the blonde lady was actually part of the team or not. Because yeah. She was dressed completely differently.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no clue. I only have a Luke Goss's not quite girlfriend, who then turns out to be also someone else.
Mm-hmm.
At the end, Steven Seagal shows up at the hotel to kill George St. Pierre, but not to kill him specifically, but that's what happens.
Yeah,
he goes down smiling at the end.
Yeah, and he's interrogating Goss, turns off the camera to get Goss to deliver the truth or whatever.
Yeah, and there's a bit of a sequel bait ending, it feels like.
Yeah,
it's something. It's open ending at least, because it's like it feels like Luke Goss basically becomes friends with Salazar, and then it turns out that this sort of love interest lady, Salazar's sister, and they just drive off in a van, and it's like, well, why isn't? I thought the hotel was surrounded by Steven Seagal's team. Oh no, that's what they used, the tunnel. They go, I don't know.
Yeah, and the stoner doorman, who's probably just high as fuck at that point, he's with Salazar
for some reason. And it just sort of, yeah, it bits it. Okay, Luke Goss is going to be given some reward, and we don't know what that is and how he's going to get it. And I don't even know, does he really know where he is? I don't know. Then he just drives him for a bike at the end after convincing Steven Seagal that he didn't know anything.
Yeah, rides his motorbike into the Romanian desert.
How much does he know, question mark? I'm even confused by this. Yeah, is he gonna write off and get like a chest of gold or whatever?
Cartels too. Cartel harder.
Yeah, cause it's not like, you know, like Salazar's like, oh yeah, meet me in Missouri or wherever. We know that. Oh yeah, he's gonna go there and get his reward.
He gives him the key and it's like, I have $500 million somewhere.
Yeah, but where is somewhere?
There is somewhere.
Yeah, because I mean, Steven Seagal sort of like loses this movie, I guess, from like a narrative perspective. He gets played by Luke Goss, and Luke Goss rides off in the sunset, and Steven Seagal is just,
yeah. Salazar escapes.
He didn't solve anything. He just gets to win his fight and monologue about turnip trucks. So he just played for a fool. Maybe this is why him and Keone Waxman stopped working together.
Oh.
Steven Seagal watched Cartels and he's like, what? You made me look like a dumbass. But yeah, the movie, I feel the movie never redeems this Salazar character enough to like justify let him ride off into sunset ending.
Yeah, this guy's probably like dissolving children in acid and like sawing up people with chainsaws, and oh, he gets away at the end. Oh, happy ending.
It's like, oh, he had a sister and his wife died, so it's sad. So he's good now. Let's ride off. Fun.
He killed some people, so he's good now. He shot them.
He shot some batter guys.
Yeah.
The ending is definitely the weakest part of the film.
Also, this is, maybe I'm insane or whatever, but Lucas has this mug in front of him the whole time. And I swear, at the end, there's one shot where they put CGI coffee in the mug. Oh. It's full, but I could swear it's CGI. It looked fake to me. I'm like, did they put CGI coffee in here, or am I losing my mind?
I did not notice that, but I'd worry about my health if I did.
If they did, it's the best CGI in any Steven Seagal movie.
Watch this movie for yourself, and then write us an email if you also think the or if you worked as a CGI artist on this movie to put coffee in Luke Goss's cup. Send us an email. let us know about that, how that was. Yeah, here's a review from Los Angeles Times. With his thick leather coat, bushy goatee, tinted glasses, and whispery monotone voice, Seagal looks like an ordinary schlub in a Steven Seagal costume.
Well, they haven't seen too many Steven Seagal movies, have they? Cause that's like him in every movie.
That's his whole look now. His new look is Steven Seagal in a Steven Seagal costume.
You can see him wearing like a rubber Steven Seagal mask, make him look like a burn victim or something.
Well, I mean, we watched China Salesman, where they just fucking put that picture on top of the motorcycle helmet or whatever.
Jeez.
That is true.
That's what Steven Seagal looks like now.
I'm dressed as Luke Goss, by the way. I don't know if you noticed.
So yeah, I guess that's Cartels. I don't have too much to say about it. It's got decent action. I was compared to a lot of the other Steven Seagal shit from the shit end of his career that we've been watching. And this, I gotta say, this is my second time watching Cartels. And, you know, I had to dip in early to get on this one. I think I liked it even more on the rewatch. I gave it 2 stars the first time, and I went all the way up to a low 3 on this one.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah, I gave it 3 out of 5, too. I think it's a pretty decent diehard riff, you know. It's got good action, respectable characters. Steven Seagal gets some funny moments, unintentionally funny moments, because he's a horrible actor. And the ending is the worst part, but, yeah, it's a passable way to spend some time. So I gave it, like, the Twilight Zone between passable and not passable.
Yeah, same. It's, I think, the first one from the back end that feels like an actual movie.
Yes, yes.
So, like, on the Steven Seagal scale, this is a masterpiece, basically.
Yeah, I think it definitely helps that they cast Luke Goss, and it's basically a Luke Goss movie where Steven Seagal is, like, the fifth main character or something, because he has less screen time in this than Goss, Pierre, Scott, and Salazar, I think, are all like, feel like they're more of a main characters in this than Steven Seagal is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Though Steven Seagal shows up first in the credits, and Luke Goss shows up last, which is weird.
Yeah, I mean, Luke Goss is also like third billed on the poster. just because George St. Pierre has a name that people will recognize, or that at least UFC fans are more likely to want to watch Cartels than British boy band music from the 80s fans are likely to go towards Steven Seagal action movie. I didn't know their audience. I don't think
that's sexist, man.
I don't know, maybe. Oh, well, that, speaking of sexist, we forgot the best line in the whole movie when Dukas is like, I don't kill pretty women, asking like why, if he ever considered shooting Salazar's sister. Steven Seagal's like, well, you make, you, what about ugly women? Dukas like, no, I'd be okay with that. Like, you still have some morals. Or ethics or whatever. It's like, ah, great. And that's the common ground between Undeadly Ground and Killing Salazar. It's like, it's not okay to kill pretty women, but those ugly women, you can make exceptions for them. I suppose that brings us to the power rankings section. I'm gonna pull up the list. We can see where we're at. Marked for Death, then Out for Justice, Above the Law, Hard to Kill, Under Siege, Attrition, Contract to Kill, Beyond the Law, General Commander, China Salesman at an admirable last place.
I'm gonna go.
We can start with Cartels, I think, because I feel it's not really. I don't think we're gonna argue very much on where that one should go in here.
Yeah,
no.
Like, I just go straight in and say between Attrition and Contract to Kill.
Oh, I'd put it.
It's much better than Contract.
No,
it's
the best of the worst.
What? It's not better than Attrition.
Oh, yes.
Attrition's pure Steven Seagal. Mumbo nonsense. The essence of Seagal. No. Okay, so you guys wanted Above Attrition, both of you.
It's the best of the back half that we've seen so far.
Yeah, well, that's I'm outnumbered, unfortunately. So it's got to be. It's because we can all agree it's under Siege.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I would definitely put Attrition above it, but I can't do anything about that. And then Undeadly Ground.
This is tricky
for me. It's number one without a question.
It's the most Steven Seagal movie, so it has to be number one.
Yeah, it's the quintessential Seagal movie.
I would put it number one, but I'll go with that.
I think just like... maybe on skill, maybe on other merits, but just on being like the distilled essence of Seagal. The only time we ever got unfiltered, well, mostly unfiltered Steven Seagal. Unfortunately, those fucking hacks at Warner Bros. Probably came in and trimmed out some of the wackier shit. Even wackier shit.
I mean, this...
Like, he fought the bear and he won?
Oh.
Yeah. Well, allegedly the trimmed speech, possibly some violence. This is why, Brenton, come back. You probably know about. You probably have seen like a work printer. Shit.
Yeah, this is like to Steven Seagal what Phantom Menace was to George Lucas. It's just them unchained from like any reality and just doing what they got to do.
Yeah, it feels like this is. I guess for Stallone, it's Cobra, and for Seagal, it's this, and sort of like just like what is the most, or I guess maybe the new, what was it, like Rambo 5 or whatever, is probably also the most Stallone now movie. Although, I mean, what is more fascist, Cobra, Rambo 5? I feel they're equally fascist, to be honest.
I gotta go with Cobra on that one.
Well, okay, well then that remains the ultimate Stallone movie.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe Brenton would disagree if he was here.
I don't know.
But he's not anymore. Where is he? Maybe dead. Who knows? If you have a work print cut of the Undeadly Ground that you've been able to steal out of the Warner Brothers waltz, send us an email.
Give us the 5-hour cut.
Oh, I had a question about Killing Salazar. Do you guys know what Steven Seagal says when he kills Georges St-Pierre? Because he says something, like maybe it's supposed to be French.
Oh yeah, my copy didn't have subtitles, so there's some dialogue in Russian, and I think he speaks French. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it could be Romanian because that's a romantic language like French. So maybe it sounds like French, but I don't know.
But But he says it to Saint Pierre, and I think he's supposed to be. But it just sounds like he was
just having a small stroke.
Yeah,
yeah. That's his big one-liner. Just
yeah, we applaud this. Anyway,
and yeah, I don't know. Steven Seagal's French, maybe also not great.
This is next ethnicity for his next project.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe he goes Cajun enough to turn into French. He might. Yeah, no, Georges St. Pierre, yeah, he's French-Canadian, so.
Okay.
But the movie never establishes that he's French.
Yeah.
I don't. Does Georges St. Pierre even speak French in the movie? Any point?
I don't know.
Does it make sense? Nobody watched this with subs.
I think I did, but it was just such a not notable line.
Well, Amazon Prime subs are questionable.
Okay. Because I watched it with subtitles, and I do remember something being subtitled at the end of the fight, but it's just not memorable at all. It was just like, okay, you're dead now, and something nobody remembers.
Well, now I'm going to have to buy it on DVD, I guess, to check.
Well, there's worse films you could buy. Again.
Yeah, China Salesman. For
yeah, the kill count video for it has subtitles under that part, and he supposedly says "Buon viaggio, amico mio," which is Italian.
What?
Of course. Hey, Steven Seagal's back to acknowledging he's Italian. Yeah. That's great. What a twist!
How many languages does he speak in this film? He speaks like English a little bit.
Right. I think zero.
Zero, okay. Yeah. Mumblecore.
Legally, that's not English.
Okay.
Can't hear, make it out. Okay, well, I guess check out the website, alotofbubblegum.com.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, you can find your way to both our Discord and our Patreon if you are gagging for more of content like this.
Yeah.
And we'll be back next week with something different. We don't know what.
Nope.
All right. Well, bye for now.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Kelly LeBrock reveals the essence of man.
It's hard to define. It's in the way he laughs, the way he smiles, in the way he kisses. The way he's so stubborn, he's always trouble. That's a man.
And when he holds you close, it's in the way he smiles. Good.
The essence of a man. Something so real.